So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Good evening and welcome to Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host, Steve Blank. Tonight, our guest will be Russell Mokhiber of singlepayeraction.org, and we'll be discussing today's Supreme Court decision to uphold the controversial mandate requiring that Americans purchase health insurance on the new exchange created as a result of the Obama administration's Affordable Health Care Act. Advocates for single-payer health care are split as to whether or not the mandate, and thus the Affordable Health Care Act in its entirety, should have been approved at all. On the negative side, the bill secures the insurance industry's position as the go-between when it comes to accessing health care because the mandate places a financial penalty on people who don't purchase health insurance from one of the private insurance companies on the new exchange. On the pro side, the bill expands coverage to more Americans via that purchasing mandate and by expanding Medicaid to low-income Americans. It also offers tax credits to small businesses and people who cannot afford to pay the full rate. Furthermore, the bill puts in place regulations that will force the insurance industry to end discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions and an end to the policy of putting a lifetime spending cap on the amount of coverage a person receives. Advocates for single payer argue that only by removing the private insurance industry from the picture and replacing our current employer-based insurance system with a taxpayer-based single payer system will we ever be able to offer comprehensive quality health care to all Americans. One such advocate is Russell Mokhiber, founder of Single Payer Action. Russell is also the editor of CorporateCrimeReporter.com. Russell Mokhiber, welcome to Health Writers on the Air.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, your organization filed an amicus brief to the Supreme Court. Russell, first of all, what is an amicus brief, and what was the purpose of the brief that you filed?
Amicus brief is a friend of the court brief, and, you know, the court welcomes them. And just in case it's missed anything. And so our amicus brief was signed by 50 medical doctors and Single Payer Action, and It's Our Economy. And what we argued was that the court should strike down the individual mandate requiring every American to purchase health insurance as unconstitutional. The Obama administration argued that this was the way to ensure that everyone was covered with health insurance. And we said, actually, there's a constitutional way to do it instead of requiring people to buy private health insurance, and that is a single-payer system where you eliminate the insurance corporations and you cover everybody through the tax system, through a progressive tax system.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me, but I think that the way I look at it, the deal was with Obamacare or the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, we're going to regulate these private insurance companies, and that's going to cut into their profits because they're not going to be able to reject anybody, and they're going to have to cover people without a limit, without any cost limit or care limit. So it's going to cut into their profits, so they're going to seek profits by having a mandate so that everyone has to buy insurance from them. Does that sort of sum up the structure of the bill?
Well, yes, and that was the deal, and it was a dirty deal. It was a dirty deal between the corporate Democrats, Obama, and corporate Democrats in the Congress, and the pharmaceutical industry and the health insurance industry. And the health insurance industry wrote this bill in the Senate Finance Committee through Senator Max Baucus and his aides who had previously worked for the industry. And just a little bit of a flashback to when the bill was being written, myself and a number of doctors and nurses went to the first hearing. For weeks, we had been asking that one of the people out of the 43 who were going to testify before the committee on this bill be an advocate for a single-payer system, a Medicare for All system. And the committee staff refused to even hear it. So on the day of the first day of the hearing, a number of us went, and as soon as Senator Baucus opened the hearing, we asked that we be allowed to testify, or at least a doctor who favors a Medicare for All system be allowed to testify. And he refused and had us arrested. So actually, this idea that single payer is the only system that controls costs, covers everyone, and saves lives was never debated. And so, for example, and that's not just me talking, that's people who know about the healthcare system far better than I, people like Dr. Marcia Angel, who's the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. So right from the beginning, we were silenced. We were not given the opportunity to present our point of view about this.
Now, Russell, let me interrupt for a second. Did that come as a shock to you or not? Because I know that in 2006, as a member of Congress, I know that Obama had made a statement that he favored single payer. So now he's president of the United States, supposedly with a mandate from the people to really, you know, have the freedom to fundamentally change some of the problems in this country. So were you surprised when the Baucus Committee, you know, Baucus appointed by Obama, told you you were not allowed to even talk about single payer?
No, I wasn't surprised because I think I understand how the system works. But a lot of progressives are deluded into thinking that President Obama is, in fact, a progressive. So that's what we have to do, is we have to put that idea aside. In fact, a former a Harvard Law School professor, Roberto Unger, who taught law to Obama when he was at Harvard Law School, taught two courses to him, came out last week and said that President Obama must be defeated because of this widespread belief in the progressive community that he's one of us, when in fact he's not. He's just another corporate politician. And so the reality is, this is not a legal issue anymore. It's a question of politics. And we're not going to get anywhere if we continue to operate within the two corporate parties. So we were in front of the Supreme Court this morning making the case that we reject Obama, we reject Obamacare, we reject Romney, and we reject Romneycare. You know, we stand with the American people, and we have to effectively push aside these two corporate parties and start from scratch.
So electoral...
there's no doubt in my mind, Steve, by the way, that we're eventually going to get single payer.
But not through electoral politics.
The 120 Americans are dying every day because of lack of health insurance. Obamacare is not going to it's not going to make a dent in the death toll. Number one. Number two, it's not going to control costs. Well, and number three, it's not going to cover everyone. Even when it's fully implemented, there's going to be something like 25 million Americans uncovered. So we know how to do this. You know, there are models all around the world. The Taiwanese model was actually modeled after our Medicare system. So Taiwan, Canada, Europe. One of the amazing things about going to these protests, as we did today, was that the foreign press, they're dumbfounded by our failure to implement a single-payer system. They're shocked. I mean, just we had about 20 to 30 people with us today arguing to knock out the mandate and pass single-payer. And there were two young men, I think they were 20 and 21, and when they just came to see us, to see what was going on, to see the circus in front of the Supreme Court, and... one of the young men just took out a piece of paper and wrote the letters NHS, the National Health System in the UK, which is more than a single-payer system. It's a government-run system. And just started carrying this piece of paper, and I asked him, well, what does that stand for? And he told me, and he said, it's such a breath of fresh air to realize there are Americans who want to get rid of the private health insurance industry.
Okay, now, you mentioned before that we're not going to be able to do it with these two parties in place. So you're saying the electoral process is not the road to single-payer health care. How do you propose we get there?
Well, like all movements, people want, one professor of history came up to us and started saying, "You're not realistic." Well, all movements, the abolitionist movements, the women's right to vote movement, they were all told that. You're not being realistic. All the stars are aligned against you. But sooner or later, the majority of the people, when they want something, get it. And so it's either displace the two corporate parties or take over the two corporate parties. But that's the only way it's going to happen. We're not going to get it with politicians like the corporate Democrats and the corporate Republicans.
That sounds a lot. Russell, that sounds a lot like the Occupy movement. Is the single-payer action group you work with working with the Occupy movement?
We are, but here's the other thing. I think we have to really start from scratch and start asking some fundamental questions, because we're still, despite all the work that's been done, and there's been a lot of work done on at the grassroots on trying to get single-payer. There's been a lot of work done. We have to ask ourselves, what are we doing wrong? Why are we failing? We have to first admit that we're failing, and we are failing. And then we have to ask ourselves, why are we failing? And a big reason, in my mind, is that this obedience to the two corporate parties. Now, we all know people who would not signed this brief that 50 doctors signed. And the mainstream, even the mainstream single-payer groups, did not want to join us on this brief. And these were pretty much breakaway single-payer docs who said, we don't care about the mainstream single-payer groups. This individual mandate entrenches the insurance industry and therefore is an impediment to the solution.
Right. I was listening to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! This morning, and they were interviewing a number of people, including yourself. But a lot of folks, even some people who surprised me by supporting the upholding of the constitutionality by the Supreme Court of the Affordable Care Act, upholding the mandate. Michael Moore, he said, this is a first step.
That's not a surprise. Michael Moore is not a surprise. He's always been a Democrat, and he's always been an Obama supporter, despite his criticism of Obama.
Well, I wasn't surprised by Wendell Potter, but I was a little surprised by Moore. But, of course, I see your point, and well taken. But I think you're absolutely right. Here are all these people who correctly, particularly Wendell Potter, who went out of his way to point out that insurance companies are the problem. And, everyone on the left essentially agrees with that. But at the same time, they're applauding a bill that, rewards the insurance companies, cements future clientele for them, a mandate that people have to buy what is a faulty product from these insurance companies.
Well, the problem with Wendell is he comes from the belly of the beast, and he knows their immense power. And he thinks this is all we can get. But he's wrong. It's a fundamentally corrupt and crumbling system. And it's going to come crashing down. And our organizing has to be built from the ground up to replace it after it comes crashing down. We all know people between the ages of 55 and 65 who have either are underinsured or not insured and are waiting for Medicare to kick in so that they can get some coverage. And that's a big chunk of the 120 people who die every year from lack of health insurance are in that category. I live in West Virginia, and a friend of ours who's an electrician is 63, who was diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm. The doctor told him it's going to be like a $100,000 operation or something. And he said, I don't have it. And so he's not getting it done. He's going to wait till Medicare kicks in. So
I know that Marsha Angel, years ago, a couple of years ago, when the debate was raging, proposed, why don't we take the Medicare system and gradually expand it? So, you know, if it's covering people who are 65 and older, why don't we say that every 5 years we'll add 10 years in the reverse direction? So right now we'll make it people 55 and older, and in 5 years we'll make it people 45 years and older. And that way, you know, the insurance industry can gradually adjust to the fact that we'll be going away from the employer-based healthcare system, which really doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. And again, there are all kinds of proposals on how to get there. They're all within the realm of single-payer activists challenging the insurance industry. The big losers here are the insurance industry and the pharmacy. The big losers, if single-payer is phased in or is brought in immediately, are the insurance industries and the pharmaceutical industries. Pharmaceutical industry because of the controlling, the one payer controlling the cost of the drugs, and the insurance industry is because they basically get wiped out.
Now, is in this bill, as it's passed, how is the insurance industry faring? Are these regulations that are being implemented by law on the insurance companies, is that going to cut into their profits, or is the expansion of the mandate going to increase their profits?
Oh, no. The expansion of the mandate is just another government bailout, forcing people to buy from them. And I don't have all the numbers at my fingertips, but I can give you my example, for example, which is I'm self-employed, and I have a family, and I have two boys and a wife. And I'm paying, and self-employed people are really behind it. They force you to go move into the corporate state and get a corporate job. I'm resisting, but maybe not for long. I don't know, because, you know, I'm paying $8,000 a year for a $15,000 deductible. It's catastrophic health insurance, and pretty soon, it's not going to be worth it.
So when we say that this bill is expanding care to millions more of Americans, you know, a lot of people who aren't really paying attention, that's not free care. You know, even if you have employer-based health care, you're paying not only probably out of your every check for that health care benefit, but then you have a high deductible like the one you just mentioned, which is extremely high, but probably not too uncommon. And then co-pays every time you visit the doctor. So still, the cost of health care is completely out of proportion with people's salaries, even working people who can supposedly afford to go to the exchange and buy one of these so-called products.
Right. And so that's why this is a bad decision today, and it's going to further the suffering. It's not going to relieve the suffering, as Obama and the Democrats are saying. It's going to further the suffering. And as the suffering increases, then the pressure will increase to gradually phase in single payer now, or to bring in single payer altogether. Now, the interesting thing is that my guess was that had the mandate been struck down, that single payer would have gotten it a lot sooner. But it's still going to happen. Unfortunately, it's going to be 120 people dying today, 120 people dying tomorrow from lack of health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so those lives could be saved immediately.
And what do you think about the state-by-state strategy, for instance?
I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it because, number one, because, it's not single-payer in Vermont, for example.
What is it?
It's far from it. They're, you know, the insurance industries are still very much involved. And it's not a public payer. It's, you know, they're going to hire, the big insurance industries to take care of the business. And there's all kinds of criticism you can make of it. But basically, it's not going to happen. Now, I think that, it could happen in a state like California if it's a true single payer. But in Vermont, they're not getting rid of the insurance industry, which is what has to happen.
And Vermont doesn't have the scale of people to really make it worthwhile. I mean, the whole idea behind single payer is you're pulling the resources of a large quantity, a large population, and you really see the difference. Then costs come down dramatically when you eliminate private insurance and you instead replace it with a pool of public money. you'll see dramatic differences. I know that California Nurses Association did a study that said if we had single payer as a nation, we would save $400 billion a year,
right,
and everybody would be covered. And I guess the Obama's Health Care Act is, you know, bragging about saving $123 billion over 10 years. Well, this is $400 billion a year. That's a huge difference.
The reality is the Supreme Court today defended the corporate status quo. I didn't believe it. I didn't. Some people told me, look, this law is going to be upheld because this law protects the insurance industry. Now, I've been saying that. I saw that they wrote it in front of Baucus. But the conventional, I guess I was taken up by the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom was at least the mandate would be struck down because of the ideology and the partisanship on the court. But corporatism trumped partisanship today on the court, and they defended the insurance industry. So we're truly living in a corporate state where both political parties are dominated by the big corporate interests. And we have to start from ground zero on how to send the message, how to get our message across, and how to start pressuring on the system so that we can save these lives. And just saying 120 people die a day from lack of health insurance, you know, people roll their eyes. They want to know, how are you going to get me there? How are we going to help these people? And it's not good enough to just say it now. We have to figure out ways to organize it. There's no doubt in my mind that if 10% of the people in every congressional district, you know, wrote letters and pressured their member of Congress, they could flip a member of Congress. There's no question in my mind about that. So it's a little bit of a cop-out to say, you know, we're going to give up on the system. It basically takes the pressure off us to start organizing. But those are the kinds of fundamental questions we're going to have to start asking now, because I don't see any model out there that's really effectively challenging the system. And so we're going to start reworking it, asking the question, why have we failed, and how can we succeed?
So how do you activate more people? How do you work within this system to make it a reality? How do you get people involved, Russell?
Human nature is really strange, Steve, in this regard. We've been protesting in front of the Supreme Court all year on this issue. Whenever there's, you know, a get-together, when the case was being argued, on Monday when we thought it was going to come down, again today. And, you know, people generally ignored us. There's a group of belly dancers from West Virginia who came in with us this morning, early in the morning, at 3 in the morning, and they said, we want to do belly dancers for single payer.
Nice.
As soon as they walked out, and you'll just click on belly dancers single payer in Google News, and you'll see all the pictures. As soon as they walked out, all the TV cameras, all the, you know, we weren't saying 150 Americans die every day from lack of health insurance. We're saying, here's some belly dancers for Medicare for All single payer. And it went around the world, and literally went around the world. One woman came up to us from across the street from the Supreme Court where she works, and she says, my best friend's a belly dancer in Rome, and she said, they're belly dancers in front of the Supreme Court. Could you go get a picture? and you will see that the message got across, like,
sure,
on the front page of the Boston Globe, belly dancers who say they want a Medicare for All single-payer system dance in front of the Supreme Court.
See, direct action. It works.
Well, and I think it says something really scary about us as a species and as a country, that people don't believe it, that 120 people die every day, or it's not registering. But we have to find new ways to make it register.
Russell, how can people find out more about the work that you're doing and about single payer?
Singlepayeraction.org is our website. And we report on all issues related to single payer. And what we're hoping to do over the next year is to develop models for civic action within each of the congressional districts. We're going to try and start from scratch and get as many ideas as we can. So if people want to write, it's action@singlepayeraction.org.
Well, clearly the struggle for universal health care through a single-payer system is alive and well, and we'll be keeping tabs with your organization, Russell, in the weeks, months, and years to come. It's going to be a long fight, isn't it?
It is, but sooner or later we're going to get it. We just have to make it sooner.
Well, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Steve.
As the host of Health Writers on the Air, I want to be clear that my personal views and opinions do not in any way reflect the views of WORT. That being said, I want to take this opportunity to offer my own editorial opinion on the Affordable Health Care Act. You know, everybody who advocates for a single-payer or Medicare for All health insurance system is in agreement that the insurance companies are the villains in our broken health care system. Yet, here is a plan written by the right-wing Heritage Foundation, passed into law by Mitt Romney when he was governor of Massachusetts, and now adopted by Obama, that codifies the expansion of the private health insurance system. This bill is not a step towards single-payer at all. And even though there are some important features that really will help people immediately, it falls woefully short of an affordable, universal system of insurance. Look, nobody's arguing that we shouldn't do the good things in this bill, but why do we need to reward the corrupt insurance companies with a mandate that people buy their overpriced and faulty coverage? This Affordable Health Care Act expands the private insurance customer base by millions of people who will still have to pay expensive premiums, still have to meet high deductibles, and come up with a copay at every visit just to line the pockets of corporate CEOs and wealthy shareholders. Is that a fair exchange? I know some supporters of the Democratic Party are just so pleased that they got something past the Republicans that they're neglecting to confront some tough realities. This is a right-wing bill that throws some tasty bones to liberals and progressives in exchange for a gigantic corporate giveaway to the very insurance companies that are responsible for the mess we're in. And now, thanks to the passage of this bill, I'm afraid we're further away from progress than we were before. Well, that's my opinion, and I'm Steve Blank. That wraps up tonight's program. To listen to this program or any of our past programs, visit healthwriters.wordpress.com. Good night.